Hi, I'm Lauren Gilger, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each Friday, we review the biggest stories of the week with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here is this week's episode.
When you have, on election day, the appearance of an outcome that one person won and the other person lost, only to have it reversed days later, the more people start to question it. It is just human nature.
Voting is so convenient in Arizona. 86% of voters vote by mail-in ballot. I don't think people are looking for less convenience. I think they're looking for more convenience.
I am that kid that worked in the fields.
What we're doing is we're wiping away my father-in-law, my grandfather, all my families.
What about police officers, firemen, teachers, plumbers?
I think we can't take anything off the table, but I do recognize that the gas tax is a very complicated issue. And I think what might provide more relief, and I think our senators are looking at this, is some federal gas tax relief.
We should not be going to war. There's no reason why we couldn't have worked this out. There's no reason why we should be going to war for other countries, whether it's the Gulf Coast countries or Israel. This is not our fight. And we need to stop what we're doing right now.
All right, here to talk about the repeal of Cesar Chavez Day in Arizona, what politicians are trying to do to address sky-high gas prices, and a failed Republican attempt to dismantle a national monument near the Grand Canyon are Barrett Marson of Marson Media. Good morning, Barrett.
Good morning, Radioland.
And Democratic strategist Tony Connie. Good morning to you both. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Okay, so let's start with voting by mail in particular here. There's a lot kind of happening on this front this week. We had a executive order come down from the president, a sweeping one that would kind of federalize mail-in voting nationwide. It would create a national list of eligible voters. It would restrict who gets mail-in ballots. This was immediately challenged by Democratic groups. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays says she'll sue about it. Barrett, as we know, the vast majority of voters in our state vote by mail. I think it's more than 80%. Why do Republicans target mail-in voting this way?
Well, first, let me say I'm a Republican that's old enough to remember when Republicans really were against some sort of national ID so that there would be some national database that we would be in. It seems ridiculous to me that should not be Republican orthodoxy. So that's number one. Number two, as one of your voices earlier said, you know, more than 80% of people vote by mail here in Arizona, vote early. We love voting early. Republicans are the ones who instituted this, and it was one of the best sort of election reforms that we have done in Arizona's history.
We were a trailblazer in that.
Absolutely. We've been doing it for over a generation. It is safe and secure. And I don't care what they do in Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or wherever else, but in Arizona, it is a safe and secure form of voting. And I say hands off our ballots.
So, Tony, we've been seeing these attacks on mail-in voting from Republicans for many years now. Every time this happens and hits the headlines or we have an executive order like we did this week, what are Democrats thinking?
Well, one thing I always think about is the fact that for years, Democrats would struggle with vote by mail. Vote by mail was something that helped Republicans win elections in our state. Mm. Until conspiracy theorists started to convince Republican voters that vote by mail was something that shouldn't be happening. And that's really what this is about, is that now these people have convinced, you know, MAGA types have convinced large chunks of a small group of Republicans that there's some fraud that can come out of this that doesn't happen. And they want to restrict voting and make it harder to vote. And we don't need to do a poll. We don't need to speculate. We know that a vast, vast majority of Arizonans of both political parties vote by mail. And I think part of the reason why this happens so much is that there is an economy that's built around this type of election denialism, where there are groups that make money from donors saying that they're going to stop this type of fraud. They're going to, you know, find out what happened in the 2020 election and all this kind of stuff. And so it's just a beast that feeds itself. But from the president's perspective, it seems much more nefarious than that. It seems like this is absolutely 100% an illegal attempt to try to influence who gets to vote in elections.
Yeah, Tony, I'll disagree with you in one place. It's not an economy that's built around this. It's a grift that is built around this.
Yeah, it's a grift. That's right.
You know, people are making money sowing doubt about many things in the election world, but especially mail-in voting. And there is in Arizona, again, I'm not vouching for Pennsylvania or any other state, but in Arizona, it is safe and secure, and that's just the way it is. And again, you know, 80%+ of people use it because it's so convenient to sit at your kitchen table and fill out a ballot.
Especially when you have long ballots like we have in Arizona with all these ballot initiatives that the Republican legislators are jumping on.
It's the judges. There's 40 judges on the ballot.
Well, we'll see. This time around, it might be both. But I wonder this, too, because there's also this debate about the late earlies, right? The people dropping off those early ballots on Election Day, which I will totally cop to having done before.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I used to be part of the problem. There's no doubt about that.
And it slows down election results and makes it harder for that process to happen quickly. And there's a lot of efforts locally to try to speed that up. What do you both make of those? Because in general, elections officials will say it's not any slower than it used to be. We're just having closer elections.
Right. And honestly, I don't even have a problem with your ballot has to be in by the Friday before the election, wherever some of the deadlines are. I don't have a problem with that. Or if you want to drop off your ballot at a poll, that you have to show your ID or the signature. Those kinds of things, actually, I don't have a problem with because we live in a society, right or wrong, where we want answers immediately. And so when the polls close at 7 and that first release is at 8, why is it that we're counting, you know, 4 days later? It's because, Lauren, you and I were part of the problem. I want to get all the mail. I want to, you know, make sure there's no October surprise. So I'm going to fill out my ballot late in the voting period, and then just drop it off on election day, and that
or
takes
maybe you
were
undecided,
yeah,
right? Or maybe there was news that some people hold on to their ballot because they haven't made up their mind yet.
Yeah.
And they know that they have extra time. I'm someone who thinks that the majority of the people who care about getting results on election night are people who sit and talk into microphones about elections and the kind of people who get paid to work in elections. I think that obviously many people have taken advantage of the amount of time it does take to accurately count these votes to sow doubt. And then they're saying, look at how – you know, they're like, why is it taking so long? It must be that they're cheating. And then they go, look, all these people think that there's cheating because it took so long.
But does it undermine voter confidence, you think, a little bit?
I think it's a vulnerability in the sense that people who want to undermine voter confidence use it to undermine voter confidence.
And remember, no matter what the deadline is, people will wait till the deadline. If the deadline is election day, they're going to wait that. If the deadline is Friday before, they will get it. They will meet the deadline. They'll do it on Thursday. Or they'll, you know, if the deadline is Tuesday, they'll do it on Monday.
So you don't think moving up that deadline would disenfranchise voters?
No, I don't think so at all.
What do you think, Tony?
I think it probably would. I think that at least in the period immediately when they change it, it will. And so, again, it just comes down to sort of like what it is that we're prioritizing.
All right. I want to talk about another big story this week. Arizona lawmakers voted almost unanimously to repeal Cesar Chavez Day, and our state governor Hobbs signed that legislation this week. And I say almost unanimously because there was a Democratic effort on the floor to not just repeal but rename it Farm Workers Day. Some really emotional testimony from some lawmakers that we heard at the beginning of the show. And I wonder, Barrett, like what do you make of that argument for a Farm Workers Day and the Republican response to it, which we also heard, which was sort of like, you know, we don't honor every other profession.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, we don't have, Cook's Day or, National Transportation Workers Day. We don't do those kinds of things. And I think Cesar Chavez, now we look at him a little differently. Up until just a couple of weeks ago, he was looked at as sort of a national hero and someone who led the civil rights fight. Now, of course, we do look at him a little differently, and it's wise to take him off of the name of schools and streets and state holidays and things like that. Cities have started taking away that holiday, and I think that's the right thing to do. I don't think we need to rename Farm Workers Day because, again, we don't have – you know, I don't think we should give this one group of people more honor than a lot of other hardworking people, plumbers. We don't have Plumber's Day.
What do you think about that, Tony, and this sort of argument that, you know, you can erase Cesar Chavez's name in light of these allegations and what's come forth in the last couple of weeks here, but we should still honor the movement that he founded, started, and other people were involved in?
I think for a lot of people, that is what Cesar Chavez did represented, especially in Arizona, where so much of that history took place. It is about these farm workers and just, you know, the total abuse of civil rights, you know, that was taking place before the movement. you know, I definitely understand it. And I think that, you know, there's a difference where at the cities they're saying, okay, well, we need to then – we're going to name it Farm Workers Day. At the state, the Republicans are never going to get behind that. Mm. And so – but I think it was a courageous, you know, effort by those who wanted to make the argument that we should be honoring this civil rights legacy. Yeah, and I was going to say, but, you know, I think that when it comes down to it, though, almost everybody voted and they said, hey, this is a person that we should not be honoring, that our history, you know, we put names on buildings and we put government statues and these things to honor people. Sometimes you get new information and you need to just be like, hey, this isn't the kind of person we want to honor anymore. And I do think that, like, how quickly that worked and how quickly Democrats sort of jumped on that to say, like, hey, this is a hero, you know, in my history, but we need to do something about it. I think that I wish we would do that a little more with some of these, you know, Civil War type figures, but that's a whole nother matter.
And
that
the good work that he did does live on, right? And the work, the civil rights work that happened in the 60s, 70s, 80s in that movement does live on. And there are farm workers now have rights that they didn't have back in the 30s, 40s, 50s. So the legacy, if you of that work, still lives on. Obviously, we don't need to lionize him anymore.
Guys, let's talk about gas prices. They have just shot up since the president began this war in Iran alongside Israel. I think it cost me $70 to fill up my tank this morning. You know, cringed a little bit.
Well, that Hummer that you own, maybe you should get a Prius
or something.
It's not a
Hummer, I swear. I did have a Prius for a long time. Doesn't fit the kids. All right. Yeah. So, I mean, Tony, you've got Senator Ruben Gallego doing press conferences at a gas station. You know, calling for the suspension of the gas tax. We've got, you know, the IRS being called for to change its policies on business use of automobiles. Governor Hobbs, some Republican leaders, too, say they pushed the EPA to issue this fuel waiver to keep gas prices lower and kind of allow us to not have to use that winter blend that costs a little more. So, like, a lot of political moves trying to be made here. I wonder, like, how much can politicians really do about this?
Well, these are all efforts to make a difference on the margins for people who are struggling, because people are struggling with these high gas prices. It all comes, of course, from, I don't know, like a fraternity planning a war in Iran. I don't understand that they didn't expect this to happen.
He expected worse, he said. So this is going better than he expected, apparently.
It's reckless. And of course, you know, this also puts a real, you know, highlight on the fact that we are so dependent on energy, on fossil fuels. And this is, you know, 2 or 3 weeks after the administration wiped out all kinds of infrastructure funding that was supposed to go for electric vehicles. And now you're seeing people being like, boy, I guess I need an electric vehicle. Every time there's a big spike in gas like this, more people take public transit, more people go to electric vehicles. And this is an example of, like, this is out of our control. You can't in America drill your way out of this specific situation that we're dealing with right now.
Well, it's hopefully a temporary situation, you know, by temporary, it's months, hopefully, and not many years. But I will say, some of the hand-wringing from Democrats, where was this in 2022 when gas was $5 a gallon here in Arizona? You know, we were told that nothing to worry about. And so it's a little bit hypocritical.
I don't know if you were told nothing to worry about. I think you were told. The difference was whether or not
we were lied to
in
by,
that situation.
We were lied to by Democrats that don't even think about it. You're doing much better than.
Well, I will say there was a trend among Democrats to kind of hold up a chart to say, no, you're doing well, which is very interesting to see Republicans do that again in this cycle. But there wasn't a war that caused this problem.
Right. Yeah, it was just bad policy.
We can see the results of this, you know, very directly from the war. Right. Yeah. But I wonder, though, because President Trump did run so much on, you know, these pocketbook issues like cost of living issues, saying we will bring down gas prices, it costs too much at the grocery store. None of those things have really happened at this point.
Well, at this point, certainly. And yeah, you know, Donald Trump, I think it's inarguable that Donald Trump won the White House because of economic issues. And now he is falling into the exact same trap that Joe Biden was in and then Kamala Harris, where, hey, it's just temporary pain. Don't worry about it, people. You're paying $5 a gallon. Don't worry about it. I'm not worried about it, says the man who has free transportation. So, you know, I do think this is a problem for Trump and for Republicans, every Republican on the ballot. just as it was 2 years ago, it was a problem for Democrats.
Yeah.
And, you know, Democrats lost a significant amount of elections because of affordability. It is still an issue. And it is maybe arguably a greater issue now because, you know, gas prices are shot up like the Artemis rocket. And they will not come down that quickly, for sure. And, you know, to the point earlier about like the gas tax and things, the gas tax is 18 cents a gallon. Significant, of course. However, we see 18 cent increases in a day. So you could wipe out 1 day or 2 days worth of increases with the gas tax. That's not a lot. That's not providing much relief. And not only that, but you're also robbing, you know, road repair and things like that.
Yeah. Tony, is this a big opening for Democrats? And how do they use this to not just talk about, right, like what the things that we're all mad about, but like you have to come forth with an idea, with ideas to, you know, actually address those cost of living issues, you know, before something.
Yeah, that's that. I think that's the real challenge for Democrats is that Democrats have to be presenting an alternative vision. And of course, one of the alternative visions is just like rational foreign policy that won't lead to this kind of a thing. But I do think this is a big opening, especially when it comes to the voters who typically would not have voted for a Republican president in this last cycle, but switched over for the first time. Mm-hmm. There was a big chunk of those voters. One of the major reasons they did it is because they thought, oh, man, these Democrats have said they would do things and they weren't able to accomplish it. And then we're going to give it to Trump because he's just going to go and do it. And they're seeing Trump just like, you know, break all kinds of laws and rules to get things done, but not to do anything related to their pocketbook issues. And I think that it's going to put a lot of credibility. And one of the problems here is that the Republicans, particularly in Arizona, that are running for all of these offices are so closely tied with the president because they can't win a primary without him, that it is a real challenge for themselves to distance themselves from him in a way that typically, you know, the party in control might do in an election like this.
There was a real chance for realignment after 2024 of, you know, Hispanic voters and things like that. The Republicans really could take advantage of increased Hispanic participation voting for Republicans. That might have been just a blip on the radar. That might have just been transitory.
You think because of these economic issues?
Because of the economic issues, because of some of the immigration issues. And there didn't appear to be an attempt to, we've got you, let's hold you.
What do you think about that, Tony?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the big lessons that I've learned doing this work in this, and, you know, I was on the Biden campaign in 2020 in Arizona, is that we treated those voters, Latino voters particularly, as a persuasion group. They were a group that you were not thinking, oh, because of their demographics, they're going to vote for Democrats. And we were very explicit about that. And one of the things that I saw is that it seemed very quickly that some of these Republicans did make the switch to thinking like, oh, we did better with Latinos than we did before. They're going to be with us for whatever reason. And that's not the case. This is a large growing demographic of voters that are persuadable. They're the ones you have to convince. You can't just make an assumption because of where they live or what they look like that they're going to vote for one of the political parties.
I want to take a minute and talk about Republican Representative Walt Blackmun in a little bit of a turn here. This is a challenge to him we're seeing happen right now. Steve Slayton, who owns the Trumped Up store, the Trump store in Sholo, is challenging Blackmun. And these two, you know, have a long history that involves allegations of stolen valor, and there's a defamation lawsuit, I know. But I want to talk about why Slayton is challenging Blackmun here, because this has to do with campaign finance reports. He says that Blackmun should be disqualified from being on the ballot because he has $168,000 in unpaid penalties because he didn't file campaign finance reports for years here. Tony, tell me what you make of this.
Well, I think that we have campaign finance reports so the public can see who is giving money to candidates. That is the reason that it exists. You want to know what they're spending their money on, that kind of stuff. And so there is a long history in our state of certain people, and it's of both political parties, choosing not to file these reports. In some ways, intentionally, I think it looks like, because they just don't want people to see who their donors are until the election or something. And I think that's a serious issue. And there is no enforcement of the fines that come out of it. What happens typically is that a candidate will just close that committee and open a new one.
Wow.
You know, I know that there's examples of on the Democrat side, like Alma Hernandez. She's someone who's done that in the past. This situation, I think, is a little bit different because this is just there was no some a lack of sort of administrative paperwork done when a candidate is no longer running for office. But the point is that like we have these campaign finance laws for a reason. They should be enforced. If they're messy, they should be cleaned up. because I do think that there's a public interest in knowing who's giving money to our elected
officials. Right. But I think we often hear when it comes to campaign finance issues that voters just do not care. I think we've seen this with a lot of politicians. But what does it mean that these laws exist, Barrett, and no one follows them really?
Well, look, in the Walt Blackman case, it's just about bitterness. They're still fighting an election from a couple of years ago. But that aside, you know, some of these laws, the laws are important. And, you know, I think Blackman just didn't really close out his campaign. That is, I think, more administrative. Mm-hmm. But when you're an active campaign and you're raising money, it is really important. Voters deserve the right to know who is giving to your campaign. It's not so much about the spending, I think, as who's giving.
And on top of that, a lot of these people are currently in office raising
money.
Right.
And so the fact that, the laws in Arizona, if you're a legislator – unless you're up for election that year, you're not reporting like you are in Congress. We have to report every quarter. You're not saying who is giving you donations. There's already really loose rules when it comes to legislators that should not be that case.
We have given the lazy an opportunity to be lazy for an entire year. And then, in January of the odd year, you got to start the even year, you've got to start filing. So you got a whole year to be lazy. And then, I got to pick up the pace a little bit. So I really do think, some of these fines should be enforced, especially on current, legislators or any candidate who's in office and not reporting.
Last word here, Tony.
Yeah. And this is simply a matter of turning in a piece of paper that says who gave you money and who's spent. This is very basic. This isn't people maybe spending more money than they're allowed to donating more money than they're allowed to. But you don't know that stuff if people aren't actually turning in that paperwork.
Yeah.
And so this should be fixed.
This should be fixed. All right. We will leave it there. Democratic strategist Tony Conney and Barrett Marson of Marson Media. Thank you both for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the biggest stories of the week with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Lauren Gilger. Thanks for listening.